Welcome all to the month four Investability Tour briefing that covers the trading period from the 1st of April to the 30th of April 2024. Hopefully you'll find it interesting as we look closer at what is happening within the credit group. Firstly, Stephen will be discussing trade finance transactions during the month of April and give a refresh on the core principles credit was built on. Next, George will show you some of the work that goes on at our deal desk and some of the potential projects him and the team are looking at. We will also be looking at our monthly segments on the Seaborne report and any updates on the European and global economies. And lastly, we'll be looking at the briefing itself and some of the key information from it with some updates on credit. So for our first topic, I'll hand you over to Stephen, who's a member of our trade desk.
Thanks for that, Ruby. So for today's trade desk piece, we'll be looking at an originator we've not discussed before. The client this month is an Irish-based food and drinks distributor offering a wide range of global brands to customers in Ireland and the UK. They started their operations in 2002 and since then has played a crucial role in the European supply chain, connecting food and beverage manufacturers with retailers here and abroad. Their business activities involve sourcing, procuring, and successfully negotiating agreements so they can secure high-quality, in-demand products at competitive prices. Once these brands have been obtained, they provide marketing and sales expertise, assisting in product launches, and in turn help their partners expand into new or emerging markets. Due to the intense demand required with supplying products while offering favorable credit terms, they experienced financial constraints on their cash flow, which in turn hampered their potential growth in this sector. To address these demands, they joined Credet in 2017, where they initially traded on our DTour facility with a total traded to date amounting to €20.5 million. They proved themselves to be reliable with good debtor payment history, so were granted approval to our BTOR credit facility in 2020 and have drawn down additional finance worth €1.4 million, which allowed them to increase their operations even further. As a result of Credet's ETOR service, they have been able to secure and manage multiple lucrative distribution agreements due to the working capital which otherwise would have been held by their customers for an extended period of time. To recap on our DTOR trading finance, it is the use of our ETOR exchange traded receivables purchasing model which utilizes investable funds. Credet buys debtor invoices or DTORs at a discounted price, helping to free up working capital. Credet then pays our client the purchase payment price, commonly 80% of the face value of the invoice, 20% less cost of funds remains as the reserve balance. On the day the ETOR are sold on Credet's trading platform, funds are issued to the client, and let's assume the invoice is settled after 60 days outstanding. Once settled, the remaining 20% reserve balance becomes available less cost of funds for 60 days, which are then released subject to our reserve and overdue policies. From this, Credet generates a modest profit for the number of days outstanding and uses these profits to settle our investors and pay intermediary commissions. We understand some traditional investors may have reservations about Credet's ETOR model, and we take these concerns seriously. Our risk management team plays a proactive role identifying risks and securing investable funds through several means. Firstly, all debtors must meet a quality standard before they can be recognised with Credet. We use rating agencies to provide recommended credit limit and scores, which gives us an indication of their creditworthiness and determines how much Credet will be willing to advance against ETOR submitted onto our trade floor. Another method of mitigating against potential risks is by reducing the standard purchase payment price from 80% to a more conservative rate of 70%. This allows Credet to maintain a higher proportion of the reserve balance, which can be used in the event of ETOR default. We also employ the use of credit insurance on high-value debtor entities, which provides an extra level of assurance and protects investors from unpaid invoices caused by bankruptcy, default, or insolvency. In the case of this originator, their debtors have proven themselves to be reliable, so the standard 20% reserve balance more than adequately covers the credit notes and specific deductions, which to date have only amounted to less than 1% when compared to the overall trading value. The total debtor receipts received from 2017 to date are valued at €20.3 million and demonstrates payment consistency with all funds mandated to be transferred to Credet's nominated bank account. As this has been a successful partnership, we are currently in talks to increase the available drawdown limit on their B2R creditor facility even further. They are in the initial stages of negotiating with a major food retailer in the UK, and if awarded, the projected turnover value is between 180 to 190,000 per month. This requires substantial B2R funds to ensure smooth operation, and they believe the only way they can successfully manage this is by applying Credet's E2R service. While this is still in the planning stages with no agreements finalised just yet, they hope this will materialise in the coming weeks. Should we proceed with this venture, we will need to conduct extensive due diligence before additional funds can be released and may require our originator obtain credit insurance, with Credet noted as loss payee on this policy. We also insist that all creditor ETR invoices must be addressed in our name, as we are paying for the stock and therefore legally own the goods. It's important for us to emphasise our core principles of funding Irish companies, enabling them to capitalise on opportunities to grow their business with the help of investable funds. I hope you found this presentation informative. I will now pass you over to George, who will discuss some of the potential prospects Deal Desk are reviewing and will hopefully happen soon.
Thank you, Stephen, and good afternoon, everyone. As mentioned in previous briefings, we are actively increasing traffic to our websites through our online marketing campaigns, and we are proactively seeking out new business across the globe. As is always a good complaint, we are quite busy, and we're speaking to many dynamic companies each day. One such company we are in discussions with is based in the United States, and they sell jet fuel A1 and diesel EN590 to customers in the United States, in Mexico, Africa, and in the Netherlands also. They purchase the fuel from suppliers based in the Netherlands, Germany, Kazakhstan, and some in the United States also. And the specific deal that we're in discussions about is the purchase of a large quantity of diesel EN590 from a supplier in Germany to then be sold to a buyer in the United States. In another deal, yet again fuel-based, we are speaking to a company based in Ghana that sells petroleum they get from suppliers based in Switzerland to customers in Nigeria and Ghana also. This company has been operating since 2010 and is involved in the importing, exporting, and distribution of petroleum products to the Ghanaian markets and other West African countries also. The specific deal he wants to speak to us about relates to three new buyer contracts that he is in discussions with. They plan to purchase a large amount of this petroleum from a supplier in Switzerland, and he has three new buyers, all based in Mali, and he will be soon sending me the contracts for these three new buyers. We are also speaking to a Hungarian company who have attained a contract with the Hungarian federal government to construct overhead electrical railway lines throughout Hungary. They import the materials from suppliers in China and India. This company has been operating over 20 years. They've over 20 years experience in the construction and renovation of railway electrical overhead lines. And in fact, there currently is no electrified railway line or electrification project in the Hungarian railway, to which this company has not contributed. The scope of their activity also includes the maintenance and renovation work on existing railway tracks. We are in discussions with a commodity trader also based in Ivory Coast who plans to buy cashew nuts from a supplier in Guinea-Bissau and then export them to Vietnam and China. The deal that we are discussing with them involves the purchase of 1,000 metric tons of cashew nuts, and there will be two buyers, one in Vietnam who will purchase 500 metric tons, and the other buyer in India will also purchase 500 metric tons. We also have a very interesting shipping deal we are working on. This is for a company based in United Arab Emirates. They have been operating for over 7 years, and they're a global business engaged in shipping and logistics. They provide their customers with fully integrated logistics and containerized transportation services. And their strength is their strategic positioning in the dynamic markets of the Middle East, China, and India. The deal that we're talking about there involves the purchase of a container ship. This container ship will be operating in the Gulf waters on the spot market. We discussed overhead electrical railway lines in today's briefing. And some of you may know that my father is a senior engineer in Israel, so I have some exposure to the subject. Interestingly, railway electrification dates back as far as the late 1800s. The early ones used power systems that were very limited in terms of distance. However, in the early 1900s, better systems arrived that could manage longer distances. These type of systems then expanded throughout the 20th century with improvements in technology. And today there are over 375,000 kilometers of electrified railway lines in the world. So thank you very much for your time, everyone. It's always a pleasure. I'm back over to you now, Ruby.
Thanks, George. As always, it's nice to hear about some of the deals that you and your team are looking at. Hopefully in the future, we'll be discussing some of these in our trade section of the briefing. So as we've stated before, Credit will always try to stay informed on what's happening in the world when looking for any new business. Trades that are meaningful to us and have an impact in today's current affairs will always be available as they're what the world and the market is focusing on. So looking to the seaborne reports that cover the major activities that affect shipping and the economy, we can see that the ongoing wars are still continuing to cause a lot of focus on risk for all financial markets, leaving investors questioning to see if the conflict will cause issues globally, with potential to cause a further increase to oil prices and the world economy. As stated in previous briefings, Credit has no direct exposure to the countries involved in the conflict, and we will continue to monitor events and look for any potential spread to other countries in the region. It was recorded that oil prices rose since the start of the month due to stronger demand in the US, where data showed slower inflation than the markets expected, encouraging the argument for an interest rate cut that could drive greater consumption. Brent futures rose to 32 cents to just over $83 a barrel, while West Texas crude rose 31 cents to nearly $79 a barrel. April inflation and a weaker than expected read in their retail sales seem to offer room for the Federal Reserve to consider earlier rate cuts, with market expectations leaning to kickstart in September of this year. Their consumer prices rose less than expected in April, which could temper the dollar strength, making oil more affordable for other currencies. In other countries, US crude oil and gasoline inventories fell, reflecting a rise in both refining activity and fuel demand received from the Energy Information Administration. The Bank of England held their rates at a 16-year high of 5.25%, but cut back on inflation forecasts, pushing the sterling down and stocks higher. This came after Sweden cut rates for the first time since 2016, while Switzerland cut rates in March, and the European Central Bank has flagged a rate cut in June. In contrast, the US Federal Reserve is set to keep rates higher for longer. It is expected that the US economy will expand by 2.5% this year versus 0.5% in the Eurozone and 0.4% in the UK. So to finish off this section, Seabourn's reports once again hold steady their figures from previous regarding the changes to their global fleet, with both the Handymax and the Panamax set to lose a portion of their fleet in the next 5 years and their future order book not sufficient to replace this loss. So moving to the Baltic Index, we saw that April started off with a gradual decline from the month previous at 1,715, falling to the lowest point for the month to 1,570. This began to pick up throughout the middle of the month and reached the highest point for April at 1,920. The index began to decline again within the last week of April, although not reaching a major low. The index ended on 1,700. We can see that this was only a small decline, which has picked up slightly moving into the month of May, as the Baltic index is recorded at 1,790 as of today. If we look to the FFA markets, we can see that the current spot price is $16,000, which has improved since last month's record of $14,100. The forecast for the coming months indicates that it is a positive one, with the spot price in the FFA markets rising throughout the months, with quarter two to end on a high of $16,400. Quarter three and four of this year are forecasted to drop slightly to between $15,000 and $16,000. And we can see that the forecasts for the rest of the year are also slowly declining towards the end of 2024, with records forecasting $15,300. These predictions are still ahead of previous year's forecasts, showing a relatively steady year for 2024. As mentioned in other briefings, we promise to continuously keep an eye on the global economy, with factoring in geopolitical issues that could cause ongoing effects to the market. So moving to global news, we see that the Eurozone price pressures continue to ease, giving the European Central Bank policymakers confidence that inflation will ease back to target next year. Headline inflation is recorded at 2.4%, with core inflation below 3%. We believe that in the coming months, inflation will fluctuate around these values, stated the ECB Vice President. In the medium term, in the 2025, we will be moving in a stable way towards our price stability objective, which is 2%, he added. As we all know, the ECB have promised a rate cut for June, so it will be interesting to see if this will go ahead as planned or it be delayed to quarter three of this year. Looking at the UK, the Bank of England have stated that they could cut interest rates in the next few months, depending on how rapidly the impact on wage growth and how the price rise in inflation eases. The Deputy Governor, Ben Broadbent, stated that this was based on evidence from companies that showed a major drive of inflation pressure due to their strong wage growth. Despite this announcement, earlier this month, the Bank of England voted to keep rates on hold at a 16-year high of 5.25%. Moving to the US, the pace of price increases showed signs of slowing last month after a streak of higher than expected inflation data had caused concerns globally. Consumer prices rose 3.4% in the 12 months to April of this year, down from 3.5% for the month before. The Federal Reserve have kept its key interest rate hovering at around 5.3% since last July, hoping that the highest borrowing costs in two decades will help ease pressures pushing up prices. Expectations of rate cuts have been repeatedly pushed back since the start of the year as economic growth holds up and prices continue to rise faster than the Federal Reserve's 2% annual target. Richard Flynn, the managing director at the investment firm Charles Schwab UK, said the latest inflation figures would offer reassurance, but were unlikely to prompt an immediate change in interest rates. So moving to the last section, I will discuss the briefing itself. You'll see the figures in the first section showing the active RSA of 52.2 million euro with 73.9 million fully allocated. If we look to the right-hand side of the briefing, we can see that the credit index has increased slightly from last month to 74, with the trading figure for the month recorded at 11.7 million euro, with all available ETR in the market fully utilised. Treasury performance increased in month four to 6.9 million euro, and the exchange's performance again continues to jump ahead of all prior years by over 41%. Our list of top 10 largest holdings and top 10 rated once again contain regular appearances from the likes of Balfour Beatty and Hansen UK. Back in at the top of the list, similar to last month's briefing, is construction debtors Balfour Beatty and Skanska Costain, being over a year now with Balfour Beatty near the top, being the largest holding on our exchange. Hansen UK is back near the top with Skanska Costain and CBRE making another appearance. Our donut graphs show a wide variation of our investments, with the largest sections again in wholesale and retail, health, construction and hospitality. These different sectors have familiar debtors on our top 10 largest holdings, with regular and reoccurring ones as well as new debtors being added each month. Skanska Costain and Hansen UK are our main examples of some of the companies representing our construction section, CBRE representing the wholesale and retail sectors, while the HSE represents the health sector. These donut graphs continue to show the strong levels of diversifications employed throughout Credet. If we look to the performance sector, we'll see that month four in 2023, there was 68.3 million euro traded compared to month four of this year, which has decreased by around 26%. To 50.5 million euro traded for April. Volumes remain steady for this month as the value to volume ratio increased again in line with higher value and quality traded ETORs. Investor redemptions reduced again this month to 90,000 euro, with the credit index slightly increasing to 74. Finally, following the last briefing, our largest trade was a construction trade this month at 2.8 million GBP. Our trend section shows the interest rates for the month, running outside of the current demand fixed and term rates. We can see from the briefing that the interest rate started a bit lower this month at 2.09%, remaining steady for the first week of the month before reaching its highest point in the middle of the month at just under 2.1%. The rate began to decline towards the end of April, with the lowest point reaching 2.07%. The last week of the month has slowly begun to increase, with potentials for May's numbers to be a little bit higher. As we all know from previous briefings, our investable rates are on offer for the three products. They currently now stand at demand at 4.25%, fixed at 5% for the 12 months and term at 19% at the end of the 36 months. This section shows that demand for investable is starting to level off and show consistency. With a combination of the new rates and exchange traded securities, which has been a topic now for a couple of months with yourselves and Patrick, it is predicted that this will continue to grow. And as before, the briefing document ends with the RSA figure of 52.2 million euro. And that concludes this month's briefing for April 2024. So I will pass you on to Patrick. I know you want to discuss the update on our investor statements.
Thanks, Ruby. Thank you, George. Thank you, Stephen. Very briefly, Deirdre and Noel Ford will remember from last month that we were discussing the new investor statement that we want to show more clearly that if a person is in term or in fixed, it's not showing the rate of 19 or 5%. Well, it's showing the 5%, but it's not showing the 19. So as I've mentioned last month and prior months, we've been doing a lot of work on the investor app, investor statements, anything to do with investor reporting and such like. So what's on screen at the moment is what I'm now referring to as the old investor statement. And we've took one person here that has a lot of investments with us, and you will be familiar with this statement, most of you, I guess, where it breaks down each investment. So this one here is going back to 2015. And if the money came in on the 30th of June, we keep one individual statement for that one investment, in this case of 225,000, and we keep updating it obviously every year. So there it is, 216, 217, 18, 19, etc. Then if the person comes along and says, well, I like this product, I'm going to put another 20,000 in, then we run a second statement. And if they say we want to put more money in, as this person did, a third statement. And as you continue on down through this thing, we have this particular person who we obviously like very much because they love our product. So they are on 33rd investment. So looks great, is relatively easy to understand. But as an investor, I have a much simpler demand, or we believe that I, as an investor, I have a much simpler demand. How much money have I given you over the last, in this case, 6 years? I want to know that. I'm familiar with the thing called a bank statement, so why not make it look like a bank statement? And most importantly, from the money that I've given you, and perhaps I've made some withdrawals like we have here of 320 and 426, I'd like to see those. I'd like to see the total amount of money I give you, the total amount of money that I've taken out, and most importantly, what's my yield? So after some work, we've come up with a much simpler statement, which now looks like this. And believe it or not, that entire document, which runs to, how many pages does this run to? I don't know. There's a lot of, 13 pages. So this statement is 13 pages. It's worked fine for years, okay, but it needs to be upgraded, and we need to improve it to more correctly reflect the rates. So that statement that I'm showing you, what I'm now referring to, the old one, will become this one. And as you can see, this fits very nicely onto 1¼ pages. It covers all the exact same information, when the receipts came in. Excuse me, when the receipts came in, any redemptions that were made, and this person ultimately withdrew all their money on the 2nd of August. So we're proposing by the end of June that all statements will no longer be in this format, that they will be they won't be in the old format, they will be in the new one. So I'm not really looking for people to say yes or no on this. If anyone has a view on it, we'll circulate both of these documents to the people on this call, and indeed to all the intermediaries. Just say, look, this is the change that we think we should be happening, And there will be only three statements: one statement for demand, one statement for fixed, and one statement for term. So if your investor has three investments with us, they'll have three separate statements, as opposed to, in this case, 33 separate statements. So that's the proposed new design, which we obviously believe is much easier to understand, much easier to follow. I can see the total amount of payments that have been made to the investor. We can see the total amount of receipts we've received from the investor. They can see their yield, and because this person has taken out their money on the 2nd of August last year, their balance is zero. So that's the proposed new statement format. And as I said, there'll be one for demand, fixed, and term. And if you then take that and combine it with the new investor app, I guess we're calling this, it has also been improved so that you can add an investment as an investor or as an intermediary. You'll have the same financial statements that I've just shown you there a moment ago. You'll have the ETR holdings. You'll have bank transactions. Well, there's bank transactions there. ETR holdings. This is an actual live piece of software, so not all the fields are currently working because it's not due to be released until the end of next month. We'll have the person's bank details and so forth. This particular app is for the investor. So I can log out and log back in. How do I do that? Oh, yeah, go down here. I log out. So if the investor comes along, they will click log in and hey, presto, here is the new app for the investors. We will then have a separate one for intermediaries where you can log in and see all of your investors in a schedule. And then you can investigate each one looking at their financial statement or whatever. And it's what they call adaptive. So if I'm looking at this on a mobile phone, it'll look more like this. And if I'm looking at it on a mobile phone app, I'll go down to bank transactions, the menu disappears. And if I'm looking at it in a browser, it'll more look like that. That's basically everything I wanted to show to everyone. Old statement, new statement, how it'll be delivered in the new version of the investor app, the fact that we will have another version of this for the intermediaries, and last but not least, if someone wants to look at how the new statement works and how things are calculated, we've also updated the investable yields and costs. So you've got Q&A 301 to 307. And that's basically everything I wanted to show everyone, and obviously take any questions, or we can circulate them. We would take them by email or offline another day.
Patrick, I have just one question. Deirdre here.
Hi, Deirdre.
Did I hear you correctly there? You said that the investor can actually add an investment themselves.
Yes, but if they do, it goes to your account.
Okay.
Is that a problem? Or is that something we should not be doing, do you think?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I don't know. What do others think? I mean...
Well, let's say Cathedral bring us an investor called Bob Smith. Bob invests 50,000. And then a month later, they put it into... excuse me, they put it into fixed and we're paying 1% to Cathedral based on the 50,000 that they've deposited. And then a month later, Bob Smith deposits another 50. Whether it comes directly from Bob Smith to us or through Cathedral, it still gets credited to the Cathedral account.
And will we be notified if they do it themselves? Will the intermediary be notified?
Well,
or do you just see it in your statement?
There you go. The answer to that question is, don't know the answer to that, Deirdre, but now that you've asked, I will make it a requirement.
It's just to keep
you track notified.
Of things. Yeah.
No, that's a very good idea. Thank you.